list up there. The first word is attends. The next word is vision. V-I-S-I-O-N. The third word is kingdom. The fourth word is church. And then the fifth word is beyond. And that reads this way. Every individual that attends your church
We're done. We're done. He knocked it out of the park.
A vision to do it a new way. Every individual that attends your church needs you to develop a vision for reaching the lost, growing the church, and increasing the kingdom of God through their lives. Everything begins here. Begin to think of the church organization and its mission on purpose in terms beyond the Sunday services. Listen, a visionless church, a missionless church, is just a hospice. You're making people comfortable until they die. A vision, a mission, makes people uncomfortable. Where you heard our last team say, we're going to take a risk. We're going to do something. We're going to change the culture. Man, that's tough. But a visionless, missionless church is just a hospice making people comfortable till they die. The vision of a visionless church is stay here. Oh, let's stay here. Let's build a couple of temples here. Hey, let's not go anywhere. Let's not do anything. It's really comfortable where we are. But the vision and mission of Jesus was what? Go. So that's kind of the key for what we're looking at today. We got some best practices. The first one of those best practices is establish a vision team. You heard Pastor Roy and I talk about that on the tour. Establish a team. You're not the only one who can speak into the life of your church. So recruit others and give them a voice. I love what Pastor Roy said in our tour. You set the guardrails. Pastor Ron, you have the guardrails for Evangel, for Hanover Park. Travis, you can set the guardrails for Mattoon, but you want other people to speak into the direction and the vision of that. So establish a team that's asking this question. What is our church doing? What is the church doing? And what are we known for in our community? Establish a vision team. One of the internal, we didn't make this known in our community, Pastor Travis, but our internal vision was we want to be the center of life in Bethalto. We want people, if they have any kind of need, to ask themselves, to just get this mindset. I wonder if Cornerstone does that. I wonder if Cornerstone has that. We want it to be the center of life in our community. You say, well, man, we're a small church. We can't do that. You can do one thing that nobody else is doing, but you can create that vision team. So Pastor Travis from Mattoon, we have a couple here. One of the others is identifying a need that no one's meeting. Talk about some of the aspects of that, if you would, or Pastor Ron, either one of you.
Either way. I'll jump in.
Did you say you wanted to?
No, go ahead and start. Okay. I'll clean up everything that you said.
All right. I'll make the mess. Okay. One of the questions that I regularly try to ask myself is, if Evangel Church wasn't in our community, would we ever be missed? Would we ever be missed if we weren't there? And so one of the things that we've identified is the food need of the area where we're at. And I feel like we've really nailed that over the years in the sense of a food pantry, which we call Hands of Hope, which we give people the opportunity to have a shopping experience that guards their dignity and respect. In the sense that once a week, every week, Every Tuesday, they come and we have shopping carts. They walk through our facility and they shop for their groceries. They walk out with about $180 minimal worth of groceries. We distribute a little over, I think, $1 million a year through this. We probably reach over 120 families a week this way. We share Christ with them. It's much like a little bit, for some of you have heard us talk about dinner church. It's our little takeoff of that, but we're reaching families that way. We know we're doing something that no one else is really doing in our community, and we've had people come because we do not restrict people from their addresses, and we've had people from probably 60 different suburbs as far away as a 60-minute drive to Rockford and all the way downtown Chicago. So I feel like we found that eventually. It took us a while to do it and find it, but that's one of the things we're doing in just meeting the food need.
You know, Pastor Ron, we're not telling people, hey, here's six things your church can do, because you know your own community. What will work in Carlinville will not work in Hanover Park.
Exactly. Absolutely. And a food pantry like that is a large-scale thing, but there's a lot of things where you can adopt five needy families in your community, just five, and then try to provide for them, whether that's once a month, maybe once every 2 weeks. But I'm telling you, over the course of a month, those five families are blessed by church. Scale it to what you can do. Don't worry about what other churches are doing, but find what you can do and do it right.
Another thing is, well, I think you can learn to get the pulse of the community by, you can take a mayor out to lunch or a principal out to lunch and just ask the question, not, hey, can we get into your community? It's, how can we serve? Or the better question is this, is, hey, what keeps you up at night? Like, what's going on in the schools or what's going on in the community that keeps you up at night? And I'm asking them questions and building relationships with them with the whole idea of answering this question. Is there a need that we can meet? Is there a need in the school system that
That's
we
good.
Can meet? Is there a need in the community that we can meet? And you don't know that until you go and connect with community leaders and just ask the question of, hey, what's broken around here and what keeps you up at night? And make some mental notes and then pray about it and then ask the Lord, is that something we're supposed to step into?
Travis, in your relationship building with your school, I know you've done great with your efforts to reach the schools and obviously your community, and I think that's awesome. Have now, because of your effort to build relationships, have you had them start calling you ever with a possibility that, hey, we're trying to figure out this. Do you have any ideas, or have they ever pursued you yet?
Yeah, in fact, that's probably where we're at now, is they reach out to us. If there's a school crisis, they call us. If there's a community event that they need a place to host their location, they call us and ask if the facilities are available. Business leaders, the university has said, hey, we've got a meeting that we really don't want on university property because we don't want people to know we're doing that. Can we use your space? Because we've got that type of we have that type of relationship now.
So what you guys have done, Travis, is to think of it this way. You've invited your mayor, your principals, some leading business people in your community to be consultants for your vision team.
Absolutely.
You've said to them, hey, you know the community better, as well or better than we do. Help us. Yeah. Serve as a consultant.
One Christmas, one of the things we did is the school closest to us, during the Christmas break, we went into their teacher's lounge and turned it into a brand new Starbucks-looking area. And our people owned it. And teachers literally came to our place crying because of the investment in them and making those kind. When you say you invest in the schools and then they start reaching to you for help, that's incredible. And that every pastor in this place should have a breakfast or lunch with your mayor on a regular basis. A couple times a year, once a quarter, invite them out and just tell them, I'm praying for you. And do that.
That leads us to our third point, turning the focus of your church outward. So, and every church here can do that. We, when we were at Cornerstone, the first day of the semester, we would make sure the teachers lounge. We would go to, I think, Panera and buy, you know, coffee in the in the cardboard jugs.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We would take fruit and bagels, and we would just stock the teachers lounge for that day and put a little tent card. You know, Uncommon Student Ministries is praying for you today. Those kinds of things. Every one of us can do that, no matter what size. An outward focus for the church to take that from, hey, let's stay here, let's be comfortable, to, hey, let's go.
It's a broken record in Evangel. They know I'm going to say it all the time, these two words, influence and invitation. I'm constantly talking about your influence. Your influence is the people that you're reaching, talking to, whether it's a commute that they are on the train down to the city, whether it's on a school bus for a kid, whether it's their neighbor across the street, their own family, all the influence, that sphere of influence that God's giving you, you are making influence constantly. And what is your invitation going to be? How are you going to bridge that to Christ and make disciples? How are you going to bring them to church? How are you going to invite them to an event that we're doing with the church? Influence and invitation, constantly pushing outward focus.
Let me share one too. With making sure your church is focused outward, it's very easy to say, well, we go work at the food center. That's outward. Here's what's difficult, but this is the secret sauce of being outward focused for your entire church body, is the things that you do on Sundays are we lean 51% to the new believer, outward, and 49 for us, which means the songs we sing better make sense to anybody that walks through the door. The highlights, the announcements, what's ever spoken on stage needs to make sense for anyone who walks through the door. The culture of the lobby, how we make sure people know where to go within the building, everything, it's geared for it's an outward focus. So we tell people, you know what, Sunday mornings isn't really all about you. It's about the empty seat that is here. Therefore, the person who's not sitting here right now, Sunday needs to be for them. So the changes that we're making is outward focus. It's for them. It's not for us.
It has to your lexicon, your vocabulary has to change. You have to. Now, I'm third generation AG. I'm Pentecostal the core, but I have to be careful tapping into that. If I'm always using phrases from the pulpit, that it's almost like a Pentecostalese, that only those that have been in Pentecost or in the church for years, they're the only ones that understand what I'm talking about. I said in a discipleship class about prayer, I said, you guys got to find a personal time of prayer, and you've got to find this place where you can get alone, get in your prayer classes, pray, seek the Lord. And I went on through it. A man came to me after class who was a homosexual that had been saved, and God was setting him free. He came to me and said, Pastor, I've been trying to get out of the closet for 47 years. And now you tell me to get back in? What are you doing?
You know, and here's another thing about this, guys, too, is it's easy to say, we don't know what to do. We tried that one time. We did one thing. Outward focus is like the farmer who is scattering seed. You keep planting, you keep planting, you keep planting, and somewhere along the way, you're going to reap an amazing harvest. We began with, I'll never forget our first outreach. I won't share it with you because it was really that dumb. But that Sunday, believe it or not, a couple came to church and gave their life to Christ. Yeah. And I was just like, and we did 100, over the next 5 years, 108 different outreaches in our community. Because what was a struggle at the beginning began to grow and become easier and easier and easier and just became the culture of our church. Yeah. Travis, you've got number four here.
Okay.
Talk to us about that, if you would.
Number four, create an event larger than any the church has done in the past, and that requires a large number of volunteers that you've had. In other words, you're giving your entire church a reason to be all in. So you're creating an event that in our language would be, this is a all hands on deck. So for instance, we do something in the fall, we call it Pumpkin Fest, and we would say, I know the target is kids and families, but we do not just pitch that to our next gen department and say, hey, you gotta put this thing on. No, this is an all hands on deck that we need everyone to volunteer. Everyone has skin in the game. And so when you do that, these events, your church owns it. The invite is better. Everybody's inviting people to the event because everybody is got a little bit of skin in the game. Two, the quality is better because things are staffed, people are there, people are helping. The impact is better because the momentum, whether, you know, you can either have a small snowball roll in and it makes a little bit of, you know, it gets a little bit bigger, or a really big snowball rolling downhill and it really collects a lot of snow. When you get the whole church on board for that one event, and I'm not going to tell you what event to do because that's up to what your culture is and what's good in your community. It could be holiday-based. It could be back-to-school-based. It could, you know, you've got to identify what that is. But to create an anchor event in the year that everyone knows it's coming, everyone knows they're going to be involved, and everyone knows they're going to invite people to.
So there's a momentum that's built from year to year because people not only in the church look forward to it, but the community does too.
The community continues. So our event has grown tenfold.
So Travis, a person who you're putting in charge of that event, what's the skill set they should have?
They're a project manager with a heart for the mission. Because I don't need anyone to love kids to do the kids' big event. They need to know how to manage teams, recruit, give clear expectations, organize. So we look for a project manager. You're going to make our bald heads up here glisten. A project manager with a heart for the mission.
And so sometimes project managers aren't always the leaders up in front of people. You have to go look for a project manager type skill set sometimes, don't you?
Absolutely. Audit your congregation and go, this is what they do in the professional world and they do really well. So, just a quick little story. My sister, who is now the CEO of our hospital in our community, their church, they go, they're Baptist. She goes to Baptist church. And this Baptist church is wanting to grow and wanting to do all these things and never once asked her for any input. And this particular medical center has grown tenfold. It's a, you know, a bazillion-dollar industry. And they've never asked her, hey, how would you help us as a church grow? Yeah. And I think we have people in our church that are knocking it out of the park in their businesses. And we've never invited them into kingdom business and says, if you can do that there, what if we bring you to the table to do it here?
That's great.
And you got to invite them to the table.
So if you've ever had a wedding for a couple and she has a book this thick about all the details for her wedding.
I say no. I'm out.
But she's your project manager for your next event.
Hey, a real practical tool that's a part of DNA of a leader that's out in the foyer is the project map.
Right.
That's a part. It's just a small portion, but it is a great stewardship project map. It will help you pull off these kinds of outreaches.
Yeah. And so that's just a great opportunity. So DNA of a Leader is out in the foyer, and Thrivent is out in the foyer. Both of those worth taking a look at. And one more quick commercial. Debbie was talking about raising up a Timothy, pursuing people who have the call of God in your life. That's why we're doing Called College. For those of you who don't know, our district, your district, is starting a fully accredited school here on this campground for young men and young women who feel a call of God to go into ministry. Our district, your district, is subsidizing the cost of that. We're losing money on every student because we feel it's so important to raise up the next generation of men and women of God who are warriors for the kingdom of God. So if you have young people who feel the call of God into ministry, they're going to be able to finish their degree at one-third the cost of any of our universities. So it's going to be phenomenal. That's just a commercial. Number five, Travis, start us, kick us off
right,
on number
let's
five.
Let's go through number five. Establish at least six times through the year with a Sunday morning sermon. We'll have vision casting as its primary focus.
Just six?
So constantly share vision personally and an outline and printed communication form. So leveraging, so like Ron just said, just six. I'm probably 50 because every Sunday is opportunity to cast vision. But let's talk about, let's just talk six. Like, how can we do this? So we leverage the calendar you've already been given. You know there's Easter coming up. So leverage that of casting vision that we are here to help the lost get saved. Leverage Christmas. We are here to help the lost get saved. So you now twice before those seasons, you are vision casting. We are here for lost people. Every time you do a child dedication, you leverage that to cast vision on next gen ministry, the importance of the next generation. You do an entire message around kids, babies, youth, teenagers, investing in called students. Like, so you can leverage your calendar and go, this would be a great time to speak vision, and it just perfectly goes in line with each other. We do kind of an assimilation type of class. It's 3 weeks, first, second, third Sunday of the month. The last Sunday of the month, we always promote and cast vision why they need to be getting involved in that. And so it's in a regular routine, a regular calendar. And so I think you can leverage your own calendar and say, where can I cast vision for the church the best that we can?
And it's not just from the pulpit.
No.
I mean, the pastors who are best, the church leaders, listen, when you as a church leader, not as the pastor, when you as a church leader begin to talk about the vision that your church has, that carries more weight than hearing it from the guy who's paid to have it. So when you as the leaders begin to share that vision of the church, that really says something to your community. Ron, how do you share the vision of your church?
Yeah, well, our vision is obviously we're doing something very strategic each week, and we have it on the walls. Literally, as you walk through our facility, you will see that we're using our Know God, Find Life, Discover Purpose, and to make a difference. But underneath that is the strategy. We literally show the strategy that our weekend services are built, like you were talking earlier, Travis, for people to bring someone to lead them to Christ. So literally, Know God is about weekend services. Then the others follow that. The second one is Find Life. For us, that's through our small groups, our life groups. That's why we call it that. And then Discover Purpose, our growth track. It literally has a pathway, as you like to talk about, Travis. You might want to touch base on that. A pathway so each vision statement can go.
Excuse you.
Am I done?
You okay?
Is the trap going to? Oh, my hand, my big hand touched the bottom of the mic. Okay. So
I thought that was techno music for a moment.
When we get them through growth track, and then last is make a difference. That is literally putting them on the dream team of some capacity, so they are doing work in ministry in reaching out to others. Talk of the difference between program and
sure.
pathway a little
I
bit.
I think some churches we've seen and we've worked with is we have all of these programs, and if you just put, you know, draw a box on your piece of paper, a bunch of circles inside of that, and those are all your programs. We do this program and this program and this program and this program and this program. And you may have 22 circles, and then the vision and the mission is, well, I just got to get people into these circles. Like, the only way we can measure are we doing well is did we populate those circles with people.
Explain what you mean by sort of like women's ministry is a
ministry,
circle.
Men's ministry. We have the Sunday. We have the, you know, this kids program. We have the Royal Rangers. We have this, and we have all of these. The quilt making ministry. We have all of these circles that we're like, we got to get people there. The question, instead of program driven church, think process or a pathway driven church that people need. Lost people need to get saved. Saved people need to get pastored. Pastored people need to get redeemed for their purpose. And redeemed people need to be sent out into ministry to serve. And so everything you do in your mission is movement, not populating circles. We're moving people forward. So then how do we cast vision? We're always highlighting how they can take that next step of movement. So now the ladies' pie baking party tonight doesn't make it on the announcements because that's not something, that is not one of our big movements. We want people to come on Sundays, get into groups, go into growth track, serve on a team, and we're always casting that vision.
Okay. It's our question and answer time. And so we have a few there. And seeing no questions, let's move on to, okay, who's first? Sam?
Ron, we have a food pantry. Likewise, we feed close to 300, 350 families a week. However, our problem has become, we have now become more a social place where people can get food versus ministry. How do we begin to create a culture where we can get people from just getting food versus bringing them into the house on a Sunday or another event?
Yeah. Sam, that's a great question because obviously Jesus fed 5,000, but he taught along with it. So I've wrestled with this before. When you have people coming through like that, at some point, we have to, for the sake of the government and stuff like that, we do have to have them register and they have to sign in and things like that. So what we do is we have them take a seat and we call them forward and they have to have a number. And so we make sure all the numbers are handed out first. So they have to sit there a while. And while they're sitting there a while, we decide when that we're going to have our 10-minute Jesus talk. And we talk Jesus, and we pray. We ask, we may ask them what kind of needs you have today. We'll pray over the needs. We also have a prayer table available if people need that. We also have Spanish available for them to be interacted if they need that. But we make sure we literally pray for people to come to know Jesus. There's an opportunity to get Bibles, and that's an effort. So for us, we don't call it one of our weekend services, but we easily could. We don't count that as our numbers typically, but we're literally trying to share Christ with them every week. I also include a letter. I write a letter every week as the final part of my sermon, and it's a Hands of Hope letter that they make sure it goes in with all of their information, or just that information with their groceries that week, and it's another invite to church. It's also the prayer. I actually write out a prayer of salvation every week, and it's a connect to what we're preaching on in the Sunday. So I just try to keep sowing seeds through it.
And any outreach we do, whether it's Food Center or anything in the community, the end goal is kingdom business of salvation. Yeah. And so sometimes that doesn't happen next Sunday.
Yeah.
But you could collect all that information and they are all getting to the next big anchor event of like Easter or Christmas or something where you're helping them get into the door so they can hear the gospel in a very relevant way.
Okay.
Tell them about Frank.
Oh, okay. So Ron has a guy in his church who Ron, what was his circumstances to begin with? It was rough.
He had, after I think, I forget if it was 20 years or 30 years working for the same company, they shut down the company and let everybody go.
And his lifestyle was...
Yeah. He's Italian, so he used to
very dark. And started coming to the food pantry, and now he's an employee of the church, and he's probably the friendliest guy I've ever met. Every time I come in, Phil, how you doing? Hey, Frank, what's up? And he's just a true servant of the church.
Gave his heart to Christ. It's transformed his life. So it's not every week those things happen, but keep doing
they
it.
They do. Yep.
Travis, can you tell me how big the community of Mattoon is and a couple examples of your outreach events?
Good sure. Question. So Mattoon is, depending on the census, let's just say 18,000. Our county is 50,000, so we look at the collar communities as potential. So that's that. So when we say outreaches, our biggest is that fall event. About 2,500 people came this year to that. And it started with about 40 kids coming 10 years ago. So that's why I say momentum, momentum, momentum. And then the other outreach is into the community we do through groups. We're serving in the food center. We're serving at a clothing ministry. We're serving at a homeless shelter. So the groups will do those. And then we haven't done this since COVID, but we were taking one Saturday a summer and doing multiple projects where we would serve all across the community in maybe 40 or 50, like teams of five, teams of seven, maybe mow this person's yard, help with this school. So that was a one Saturday a year, and we really spread out, but we haven't done that for the last couple of years.
Can you speak to the previous panel was talking about this idea of pushing decision-making and authority away and down? And here we're talking about these practices of getting, you know, turning outward and those types of things. How do you balance pushing those things away with bringing that broader community and the church to this mindset so that they don't get that decision-making and authority and then decide to be inward-focused?
All right, I'll let these guys answer that. But real quick, the first thing I'll say is this, is that the pastor always sets the guardrails. The pastor is the pastor. Part of leadership is, we had a guy one time who wanted the church to do its own lottery. And as the pastor, I said, you know, that's probably outside the guardrail. And you as the pastor, you're the leader. You set the guardrails. But you are, by inviting others into that, it's not pushing authority away. It's inviting others to share and have that authority with you.
Yeah, I would say vision is top down, but leadership of the vision can be delegated out. But it has to start at the top. So we've had someone walk up to us and say, Pastor, I have this great idea. I want to do this, this, and this. And I think this would be good for our church to be involved in. Well, if it's not in the big picture of our vision, you have to have that conversation in your head, how to kindly say no, or that's not in our lane of who we are and what we do. But the vision has to start at the top, or you'll get some rogue ministries taking place, and then they become their own ministries, which is their own kingdom. And the next thing you know, people are they're using your church as a platform to do what they want to do.
This happens often when great people move into your community or transfer from another church to your church. They want a great program that they were a part of where they used to be out of state or at their former church. They'll want to try to fuse that into your church's ministry. And you've got to hold that up to the light of your vision and mission and say, is that a part of us or no? If not, how do you say no to them, or how do you adjust it where it can be? For example, this is happening right now at Evangel. I've got two great ladies that want to do some type of, I started to say big ladies event. That's inappropriate to say. Okay, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Forgive me.
Hey, if there's a niche.
A large event that included ladies.
There you go. That's what I was wanting to say. Remember, work on your semantics, your wording, everything like that, right? Okay. And they want to do this large event, and It is a large event into itself. And we're about moving people on a path. And I've got to have the come to Jesus meeting, guardrail as pastor, and say, ladies, this is phenomenal. And we may be able to do something like this, but you've got to understand, we have a path that we're trying to take. We're more concerned about these ladies being connected to one another in more intimate disciple-making path than we are just everybody having a big event together. And so that's one way. It literally is practically fleshing out right now.
So, someone in the back texted me and said, quit talking as much. So
shotgun. We'll do some quicker, like just quick responses.
All right.
So we can get a lot of answers in.
Here we go.
I just want to thank you guys for doing this this weekend, because this is all this practical information that we've been given. Man, I am just like, I can't wait to get home and start putting stuff into practice. But the question I'm going to ask may seem like it has an obvious answer, but I really want you to address this. The outreach focus thing is really, really good, like helping the needy and stuff. That's what we're all about. But what about when you have needs right there in your body that you're not meeting, like financially or whatever it is, and yet you're reaching out to the community, helping people that are needy, and then you end up losing people in your church because you didn't meet their needs?
Well, we're going to talk about finances in the next session, and Raleigh is going to give us all the answers for that. So, and there's a balance of that. You are called to meet the needs of the body.
Yes. Benevolence.
But, yeah, it's benevolence, and, you know, we budget for that, and we have all of that. There is that sense of, if you will, that sense of saying, okay, we're going to plan for what we're going to do out in the thing. We're going to budget for that. We're going to save for that. We're going to meet all the needs that we have that we can on the inside. But at the same realm, we're saving to do more on the outside. So there's always that dichotomy of that. I'll never forget when the second church that I pastored, we went and we had the hardwood pews, and all the varnish had worn off the pew. And so on Sunday, when you sat down, when you went to get up, your coat would stick to the pew. Yeah, some of you remember those days. And I said, why haven't we either gotten new pews or new chairs? And someone said, that would cost us all the money that we're saving for missions. And I wanted to say, yes, but sinners who come into our church won't come back if they have a $30 dry cleaning bill every week from peeling their clothes. You have to find that balance. All right, we got time for one more.
Maybe two if you just give a quick answer.
Hey, Alton.
Hey, this may be just a simple answer for you guys, but you said vision and mission, and how vision can put us in or not having a vision can put us in hospice. What's the difference between a vision statement, a mission statement, a purpose statement? And how are those two things, are they separate? Are they the same? I know like we probably have like a bunch of different answers, but I respect your guys'.
Mission's on the wall, vision walks down the hall.
Yeah, vision's where you're going. Mission is who you are, but yeah, that's.
Yeah. Think of it this way, we all share the same mission. Go into all the world.
It's the same
the
one.
Gospel.
No matter how you want to phrase it,
it
all comes back to
Matthew
28,
always the same 19, mission. The vision is how God's calling us, how the Holy Spirit is speaking to us to accomplish what he's called us all to do.
All kinds of different paradigms.
I wouldn't get caught up in long, long meetings on how to craft the perfect sentence of who you guys are. No. Borrow something that works, that's really good.
Make disciples.
That's
good enough
kingdom,
for everybody.
That's kingdom defining. And then spend your time on how you're going to do it.
How are you going to accomplish the mission? That's the vision.
Probably a difficult question to articulate, but an easy answer. We've seen the events where somebody comes through and it feels like you're stamping them with your logo every event they come through, and they leave going, okay, all that was just a promotional event. You just wanted to get your name out there. But we've also heard of people who it goes too far the other way, where, well, we just want to serve our community, and then nobody knows who served the community and you're not getting any credit for it. And that's even saying that, you sound weird saying, I want our church to get credit, but at the same time, if we're honest, we are doing things so that we can spread the gospel through our church. So how do we find that balance of, I want credit for our church doing this event, and okay, well, that's not the reason for doing the event. Am I making...
You just want to make sure you're doing an event that you want your church to get credit for.
Yeah, I would say this. So if it's just all about getting the name out, we always have to ask the question, are we adding value to everyone who shows up?
Yes.
Are we adding value? And then secondly, are we letting them know where the value comes from? It comes from the Fields Church, so we'd love to have you back.
At the same time, one of the dumbest things I ever did, because I got the idea from one of these kind of conferences, was to give away Starbucks cards. And I realized here we were giving a really nice gift to people that had absolutely no attachment to our church. So I have no problem giving out something that has an attachment to your church, especially when it's something nice.
When we used to, we had the huge community outreach that we had. We would have thousands of people show up, and we had all our volunteers in the ugliest, brightest t-shirt that you could ever imagine. And so when people are looking and seeing this dog ugly t-shirt, it proudly had Cornerstone Church on it. And because, so that way they knew, it's like, man, look, 200, I think we averaged like at the height, 267 people working that, all with the ugly, Pastor, do I have to wear this? Yes. And it's, you know, so.
But fortunately, Eric Scottberg, everybody know that name, Eric Scottberg has taken care of that ugly color.
He okay. Sure did. Hey, let's thank Ron and Travis. Great work. These guys are living that.